series.
Follow up, by the way, for all of you that are interested. Mephibosheth is mentioned three times in 2 Samuel. He's mentioned mainly, he's mentioned more than that, but the first big event we read this morning. The next event we're going to read now. Verse 1, 2 Samuel 16. And when David was a little past the top of the hill. By the way, you'd have to know the background of this. And the background of this is David is forced to flee from Jerusalem because of his own son has attempted to overthrow him as king. Absalom. Got it? So he's getting out of Dodge. When he gets out of Dodge, on the way, Ziba, you ever heard of Ziba? The servant of Mephibosheth met him, and with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins and 100 summer fruits and a bottle of wine. And some of those things, we don't know what all those things mean, but basically Ziba brought David some asses, mules, or something to that effect, that David could then use for transportation and some food. And by the way, probably was pretty necessary at the time. Verse 2, and the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, here's a second question. By the way, when you read this, actually read it. He asked a question, he asked a second question now. Where is thy master's son? Where's Mephibosheth? Hey, where's Mephibosheth? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. So maybe after all this time, Mephibosheth is a traitor. Or isn't he? Verse 4, then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine or all that pertain unto Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king. Now, we're going to not read 2 Samuel 9. We'll read it during this preaching. We will read 2 Samuel 19:2. What we're going to look at is the rest of the story. My friend, please look up here. I preached my heart out this morning. I could not have put anything else out there. There was nothing left to try to convey the true sense of the gospel. I still fear there are young people here that don't get their sinfulness before a holy God and think maybe because I'm a good person, I go to a church, I'm okay. Or I have, look at me, I have prayed a Baptist prayer and I'm going to heaven. My friends, you go to heaven because of one reason, not because of anything in you, but because of Christ. Tonight, it's the other side of the story. It's the hard side. Father, I ask your blessing now on this night. May this be a profitable night. In Jesus' name, amen. Tonight is a sermon that deals with human wickedness. In your notes, you've heard this statement, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on who? Is that correct? Fool me regularly. I don't even know what to say when a person's a fool on a regular basis, do you? That means they're not interested in growing or learning, they're just a fool. So I don't have an answer to that. Shame on my lack of shame? Who wants, by the way, is there a line? Look at me. There's the door for all the fools. Go through it. Are there people that want that? And the answer seems to be yes. Now, tonight's sermon is a sermon of thinking. It's a sermon of evaluating. It's a sermon of trying to understand people. Some people in this room are very good at it. I'm not going to tell you who I have opinions about. Some people wouldn't have enough discernment to know there is a door over there. By the way, some of us have very little discernment. This sermon is about discernment because David makes in my opinion, some bad choices. You say, is that possible? Well, here's my introduction tonight in your notes. No real special introduction. Number one, it's not numbered, no human is infallible. If you don't know what infallible means, no human is incapable of making mistakes. Next, no one is omniscient. Nobody. Next, all of us, and when I say all of us, guess who the all means? Why is it that some people don't listen to simple truth? All of us are capable of mistakes, even big mistakes. You say, Pastor Warren, have you made big mistakes? Let me give you a simple mistake that Sharon Vasilovich and I made. I won't blame it on Sharon, I'll blame it on me. Now, Tim, I was trying to say Tim and Amy at the same time, saying Tammy. They won't make this mistake. Do you know if you go to a Christian college and you graduate from a Christian college and you take an education degree and you get a C in your student teaching? Does anybody know what C means? F. I did not know that. So we hired a teacher or two that couldn't teach a lick because we assumed a C meant a C, meaning they're not the best teacher we've ever had. I was assuming Christian schools didn't grade inflate, and you know what I found out? Yes, they do. C means F. I've made mistakes. You say you make choices based on the information you have. It's all you can do. We're going to get to that. All of us are capable of mistakes, even big ones. Those aren't my biggest mistakes. I have made many good choices. I have made one terrible choice in my 23 years here, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. But for me, it's so obvious that it bites me every day. All right? And you say, why did you make that choice? Because I made that choice because I trusted some people of whom I found out were not trustworthy when it came to their own leadership or in the producing of leaders. By the way, I don't make mistakes in some other areas. I recognize this guy here. He's not perfect, but I recognized who he was when he was a nobody in this place. You didn't hear me. He's still a little bit on the bashful side. He still would rather not talk to people. He's a little better at it now. I saw Dada in, frankly, Romeo real early on with the capabilities. I'm pretty good at discerning, but I've made a few really stupid blunders in your notes. A decision is only as good as one's, first of all, information. Folks, if you don't have all the information, it's hard to make good decisions, isn't it? You also need judgment, or if you don't prefer judgment, discernment. But who wants to say, I don't have any discernment? But I can look out there and point to four or five people that have no discernment at all. I know you don't have discernment. It's not hard to figure out. Do you know it? Do you know you're not good at making decisions? Wow. Some people are better than others. Some people are very poor at making decisions. A decision is only as good as its information, your judgment or discernment, and your biases. Friend, biases enter into any kind of decision-making process. My friend, it's hard to make hard decisions. Look at me in the eyes. It's hard for the guy you're looking at to make hard decisions when I like somebody. I have told Tim and I've told a couple other people, I have never, ever been wrong about a person if I didn't like them because I don't have biases. I've only been wrong about people that I initially liked. And why do you generally initially like somebody? It's because they do something good to you or for you and you like them, therefore they must be, say it, they must be good. There's my Achilles heel. Oh my goodness. I've learned that the hard way. Look at me in the eyes. Have you learned anything about yourself? Do you know if you have discernment? Do you know what your biases are? Some people, it's their children. Whatever their children tell them is true. Folks, I love both of my children, but if they're stupid, look me in the eyes. If my children are stupid, they'll be stupid alone. I'm not following my children to Alaska because they're idiots. You say, even your children? Both of them already know it. I've said it publicly. I said it to Amy this week. If you and Jared want to be, and they don't want to be, but I said, if you guys decide to be stupid, you're going to do that alone. You mean you wouldn't move to Alaska with them? Really? Okay, I better move on. Some of you are getting nervous. Snap judgments. Some people just, that's how they make all decisions. Or the paralysis of analysis are both unhelpful. Next, no one has a gift. I think there are people that think they have a gift of discernment. Age will take that away from you. Yes? Once you've made enough bad decisions, you'll start realizing maybe I don't have some special gift. Next, yet all must make decisions. You must make decisions. So I want to ask a question. I want to ask a question of those who don't usually think about things. So everybody look up here. Let's put this out right where your life lives. I have a lovely mother. Did you know that? She has four children. The two daughters are probably the best of the four. And then there's the two brothers. I'll leave it at that. My mother has a house. You say, is it a mansion? Honestly, if it was given to me today, I wouldn't live there. It has the one fatal thing that I would not live in a house with. And you say, what is that? The way it's built, like a shotgun house, you know what that means? So if somebody burps in one room in the far back of the house, you can hear the burp. I would never live in a house like that, a shotgun house. My mother's 86. By the way, I'm trying to be honest. My mother's 86. One day she's going to die, and there's four people that have ownership in her property. So I'm going to ask you, do you have discernment? I already know there's going to be a fight. I have a brother that thinks he sees my mother once a day. He's visited my mother about one time since she's been in assisted care in the last 2 years. Maybe once. He's maybe called her once. But in his brain, he thinks he visits her every week, three times. Look at me, folks. I already know there's a fight. You say, what are you going to do in a fight? You have to decide how you're going to behave. You have to have principles. You have to have discernment. You say, what are you going to do? I don't need the house. Don't want the money. Ho-ho! So I'm out of there. I'm out of that fight. How about you? Or would you lose your whole family over a few hundred dollars? Frenchie? Everybody, answer the question. The answer is, families are separated for the rest of their adult lives over a few hundred dollars. There was a lady who used to come to this church. Her and her husband moved in a different state years ago. She said she was at her grandmother's funeral. Her mother and two sisters, there were three of them, and they were in their 60s, had a fist fight and a hair pull in front of the casket because her mother had $5,000. Really? I wouldn't cross the street for $5,000. Would you? All right. You have to make decisions, and it's not going to be just about that. About 1,000 things. I remember one family that left here to move to Florida. The mother moved with them. Then the couple moved back here. You make 1,000 decisions. Do you follow your children? Do you stay where you are? And by the way, how you make those decisions do matter. They matter a lot. But some of us can't think. We go with our emotions. We think emotions is wisdom. All right. You say, what are you preaching about? We're going to preach about this text. There are people in the Bible that thought they were intelligent. Job's three friends. They thought they had a handle on wisdom. My favorite verse, I never quote it because it's too sarcastic. And Pastor Warren has to avoid sarcasm because I am naturally sarcastic. Job answered and said, no doubt, but ye are the people, and wisdom shall die with you. Oh, that is low. But he says, but I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior to you. Yea, who knoweth not such things as these? 13 verse 1. Lo, mine ear hath seen all this, and mine ear hath heard and understood. What ye know, the same do I know also. I'm not inferior to you. Surely I would speak to the Almighty and desire to reason with God, but ye are all forgers of lies. You are physicians of no value. Then one of the guys answers back. He's talking about his own opinions. He says, are the consolations of God small with thee? This guy was so impressed with himself. When he spoke, God spoke. Ooh, wow. 16. Then Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Well, I'll begin with my first statement. By the way, friend, I have to be very careful. Please look at me. Everything I said this morning was true, and it's one of the greatest things about David's life was his loving kindness to Mephibosheth. We're not discussing that. Look at me. We're discussing the other side. Ziba. Okay? And what he says about Mephibosheth. So in your notes, David was wrong at the very first meeting. And you say, how was he wrong? Well, let's look at these verses. We'll read them, and then I'll give you some questions and thoughts. It says, and there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. So the question you have to ask is, where was Ziba living? What was Ziba's job? What was his role? Who was this guy called Ziba? Now, Ziba's the one that introduces David to Mephibosheth. Verse 9. When David is finally introduced to Mephibosheth, and David not only loves Mephibosheth and promises Mephibosheth, but he says, Mephibosheth, you're going to eat at my table the rest of your life. And oh, by the way, it's in verse 10. And that's a tough verse. He says to Ziba, Ziba, you therefore and thy sons and thy servants shall till the land. What's the next phrase? We're going to come back to that. And thou shalt bring in thy fruits, and thy master's son may have food to eat. But Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread always at my table. By the way, Jim Duncan, I don't know if you caught yourself, but you reacted when I read this line this morning. Some of you went right straight to sleep. When Ziba comes before David, how many sons does he have? You tell me. And how many servants did he have? Does this mean he's a poor guy or not a poor guy? See, we miss reading the scripture. And frankly, David missed it. I think David made major mistakes right up front. In your notes, I'll let you just contemplate this for your own wisdom's sake. When you read this, and I misspelled, but I won't in the correction. Things are, at first, they seem to be okay. Then you notice some clues. The first clue is this. Many years had transpired. Many years had transpired. You say, how many years? I don't know, but I know this. Look up here. I'm not going to read the text. I'll tell you the story. When Saul and Jonathan were killed by the Philistines, that's when Mephibosheth was carried out by his nursemaid. He was how old, Frenchie? Frenchie actually read it. Frenchie. He was 5 years old. Hold it. That's a pretty big kid to carry for a woman, correct? She dropped him, caused him to be crippled the rest of his life, correct? But think about this. When David sees Mephibosheth, how many years has transpired? I don't know exactly, but I do know this. Mephibosheth is old enough to have a child of his own. And that child of his own is at least 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years old. So what's going on here? There's a long time transpired. You say, Pastor Warren, why are you asking this question? No, no, no. I'm going to ask you, why aren't you asking this question? You're really not going to like me in a minute. This question leads to some bad places in the text. All right, let's continue. I asked the second question under that. During this 15 to 20 years after the death of Saul, here is the question. Who was in charge of the property of Saul? Who was in charge of the property of Saul? Everybody say it. Who? Now let me tell you a story that happened when I was in Bible college. About my second or third year there, a lot of young men got out of one of the last classes at 1 o'clock, and they needed to go to work. The school decided, not for me because I was married, but for single students, they started basically a bag lunch program. For $1, a young man could get a sandwich, like a bag of chips, an apple, and maybe some kind of, it was really a good deal. It was either $1 or $2. And they got a nice little bag lunch that they could just, here's the money, grab the bag, run. Guys had to go to work. A young lady was put in charge of that. But there was a problem. I remember when they started the program. I never used it because I was married, my wife cooked for me or ate at the hospital. But I remember when they started the program, that program went on for about 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, I still remember it was summer school. Dr. Evans came to chapel or something and said, so-and-so, I'm not going to use a name in here, so I got to think of a name we don't have, Susie. I'm sorry to say that Susie has been expelled from school. By the way, I asked you a question. Who was in charge of Saul's property for the 15 to 20 years after Saul had died? You better ask yourself a question. And what do you reckon Ziba was doing with that money? Well, he was giving it to the poor, of course. Why do you think Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants? This young lady was the head of that program. Now, it wasn't millions of dollars, but it was. Let's say it was $2 per bag lunch. There was 100 to 200 guys that picked up a bag lunch and took off. But after the first week, nobody asked for the money. After the first month, nobody asked for the money. After the first year, nobody had asked for the money. It was at the end of the second year, somebody was just thinking, and they just asked, you know, I think they were literally walking past the bag lunch, and they asked themselves a question, I wonder where that money goes. And that young lady had done exactly what Ziba did, which was, here's David. David made a huge mistake. He went to Ziba. Who was in charge of Saul's property? Ziba. What had Ziba been doing with the money? Oh, I'm saving it. You say, Pastor Warren, you are a cynical person. Can I ask you a question? Aren't you glad there's some people that can think about something other than bubbles? These kind of people will skewer you. And other Christians are like, okay, they're little bobbleheads in the back of the car, bobbling. By the way, folks, if you want to be killed, these are the kind of people that do it. And you know, you have to know who's there to help you and who's not. We continue. So who was in charge of that property? Ziba. I don't have the questionnaire, but what was he doing with the prophets? By the way, you say the Bible doesn't say. Look at me. It doesn't have to say. Then we ask the question, where was Mephibosheth? Somebody tell me where Mephibosheth was. He was in Lodabar, which is a no place, a no name. Hold it. Let me ask you a serious question. Why was he there? If Saul is dead and Saul's sons are dead, who's that property belong to? Why wasn't Mephibosheth living at Saul's property? Because he was a crippled guy that got the boot. Now, the nice thing is, if you read this and you understand this, Mephibosheth, if you read the rest of the story, which we won't tonight, Mephibosheth was staying with a very loyal guy to David. One of the guys that was loyal to David the whole time. But he was staying in a nowhere place. Why? Because Ziba... Let me ask you a question. When David asked Ziba, where is Mephibosheth? David should have been thinking, wait a minute. He's done this to Mephibosheth before. Send him off some other place. He's collected the money before. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had somebody steal in your family? Have you ever had somebody die in your family and all of a sudden one of your cousins or my aunt, my mom's oldest brother, he's gone, long time. My Aunt Loretta, which was his wife, died last year, the year before. Are you listening to me? They had the funeral for her. My mom was there, family was there. When They then came to the church to have the meal. When one of the children went back to the house, their entire house had been rifled through. Look at me. Every single part. Because one of the other brothers or sisters decided, I think my mom has money hidden. You say, people wouldn't do that. Okay. All right. Folks, some people would steal 50 cents from you. Don't you know that? So let me ask you a question. Everybody, Tim Kowak, is he a trustworthy guy? I would trust him with my life. I can't say that about too many people. You say, how could you trust him? 23 years of observation. Now, it's not that he wouldn't steal. He's too oblivious that there would even be money there to steal. He wouldn't know. Oh, my goodness. You say, what about other people? I'm just talking about Tim. I got to have people work around me that I can trust. Yes or no? By the way, folks, the best people I have always chosen are the inner core, because I can trust every one of them. Jan Thompson would rather kill 1,000 people than steal a penny. That's not true of everybody. And no, I don't hire people who I know are thieves. All right, we continue. Well, I ask another question. What did David do to Ziba? Let's read these two verses. And the king called to Ziba, Saul's servant, and said unto him, I have given unto thy master's son all that pertained to Saul and to all his house. But I don't know if David wasn't thinking. Ziba thought this was his already. And you're giving away what I've been running for 15 or 20 years, and you're giving it to Mephibosheth? Thou, therefore, and thy sons and thy servants shall do what? So we have Ziba that had been the master of this property, making money, having power. Now David says, oh, by the way, I want you to go out and farm this. Now, folks, in America, to be a farmer is not a slam. But in most countries of the world, poor people farm. And Ziba is put down at the bottom. You're the guy out there, FBI. Your son needs to do this one summer anyhow. He needs to go over and try some planting of rice in a rice field. Because if look at me, Russell, you want to understand work. I get worn out just watching guys do it. In mud. Oh, my goodness. He took Ziba with money, power, and influence and said, oh, by the way, Ziba, I want you to... Because he's thinking Ziba's his servant. Things aren't good, folks. Okay. We go on to the next question. I asked the question, was Ziba important before this? I don't have any verses here, but the answer is, well, he did have, if I'm not mistaken, he did have 15 sons, and he did have 20 servants, and he was in charge of Saul's house. I think Ziba was very important. So when it comes to Ziba and Mephibosheth, I believe David was wrong. Look at me in the eyes. At the very first meeting, what do you think? You're not sure. Please look at me. I love you, and I'm going to say this gently. If you don't get what was just said, please don't make big decisions. Find people around you who understand everything I just said. And there are people in this room this comes natural to. I won't mention Zorro over here, but there are people that get this kind of thing. It's the reason Christians don't do well in politics. Because you believe him, right? Oh, my goodness. Next page. David was more wrong in the second meeting. Now, he didn't meet with Mephibosheth. He met, of course, with Ziba. You know this word halt, don't you? You ever seen this here, folks? Never make a decision when you're what? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. David has just been forced to flee from the capital. His own son is trying to kill him, Absalom. In the very midst of all of this, David is in a very difficult spot. He's hungry. I'm assuming he's angry. He's feeling isolated, lonely, and he's certainly exhausted. And David then meets Ziba. In your notes, when David was a little past the top of the hill, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses. And he goes on to say, verse 2, David asked him a good question. What meanest thou by these? What do you mean by this? And he says, well, you guys need food. You need something to drink. And then in verse 3, he asked him the second question. Where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore unto me the kingdom of my father. Verse 4, then said he, the king, to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertaineth unto Mephibosheth. Ooh, my goodness. First of all, he didn't even ask Mephibosheth. He's made a decision without even consulting the other side of the discussion. I don't need to talk to other people. I know who my friends are. I'm not a fan of Trump. I want to be very clear. As a male, he's worse than any president maybe ever, except maybe Warren Harding. There might be a couple of others. But you know, I do believe in this Trump, what do they call it, Trump derangement syndrome. You know, there are people that if Trump somehow pulled off peace around the world, we'd still want to hate him. Because people are extremely biased about everything. And look at me, and so are you. I talk to people about what Trump did with Putin, which cannot be defended by a Christian, an American. It was the most repulsive thing I've ever seen in my adult life, and I had people trying to defend Trump. And I looked at him and said, you sound like the people that tried to defend Obama. I didn't like Obama's behavior, and I don't like Trump's. Because I think the same shoe fits on both feet. Uh-oh. By the way, that's lack of bias. People, this is my guy, no matter what. Well, we want to move on here. Let me give you some thoughts. Here's the good part. David did ask questions. In fact, he asked good questions. He asked Ziba the first question, what meaneth thou by these, meaning these gifts? What do you mean with these things? Now, Ziba just simply said, well, you know, you need something to ride, you need some food. And Ziba didn't tell him, well, I'm trying to buy you off, but that's another question. He also asked, where is thy master's son? Those are good questions. Next, David was not in a good place to make decisions. Oh my goodness, he's not in a good place. My friend, when is it worse to make a decision? When you're in a crisis. When's the best time to make a decision? It's when things are moving up. You get in the middle of a crisis, it's hard to think. Emotions are swirling. Biases are swirling. You can't see from the fog. My goodness, you prepare for the fog of war before you're in the war, not when you get there. We start making crazy decisions. David wasn't in a good place to make decisions. Next, David was in great need and therefore in Ziba's debt. And my friend, you are all, look at me. In 2 Samuel 15, we'll get there in a few weeks or months. You look at this. When Absalom stole the nation's heart, he did exactly what Ziba did. He went to people and he said, you have a problem. Well, it's a shame that David hasn't done something about your problem. Hey, if I was the king, I'd do something. And people just followed. By the way, most people can't think. You give somebody something. I remember some people would rather die than get their government gifts taken away from them. They'd vote for Antichrist as long as they got their government gifts. Everything is about David was in a bad place. It's hard to think when that guy's giving you food. Real hard to think. Ziba wasn't so dumb. He put David in that spot. By the way, I'm going to say something about Ziba. The moment you get this, you'll never think of it the same way. I don't think. Let's continue. David also had very little information. He had very little, or very limited is what I really said. Little works too. He didn't know. How's David going to know? David is escaping, trying to make do. And the next thing you know, he makes a decision. And what's his decision? Ziba, everything I gave to Mephibosheth, I'm giving to you. Wow. I say in your notes as we continue this, David was unable to do due diligence. He just couldn't do the due diligence that's necessary. Now, friend, I'm going to do something. I promised myself that I would never preach on this for many years to come. So please look me in the eyes. I am going to keep my promise to myself. There are certain passages that I will no longer preach on to this church because this church refuses to obey them. And it is so obvious that I'm not going to mess with it. I'm going to read the verses without comment. He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is. So folks, if you don't know what you're talking about and you're making decisions, you are a fool. The heart of the prudent getteth knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeketh knowledge. David didn't have time to do either one of those. Verse 17, he obviously didn't have time to do this. He that is first in his own cause seemeth just. Ziba sounded right, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him. These are the verses that I will no longer preach on. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Every purpose is established by counsel, and with good advice make war. For by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war, and in the multitude of counselors there is safety. We now move. Everyone look at me. I know this is a little long, but it's not real hard. We have the first meeting. Look at me. Here's the first meeting. David wanted to show the kindness of God to Mephibosheth. Everything he did was beautiful. Shows you what Christ did for us, but there was one problem. He misjudged Ziba. And he put Ziba in a terrible place and forgot that Ziba had kind of been in charge of Saul's stuff for 20 years and taking in the money and made him a farmer. Oh, you got. So the next event, the second meeting, David is fleeing for his life. And Ziba comes and, here's some food. Here's some animals to transport you. Where's Mephibosheth? Oh, Mephibosheth said, I ain't coming. How does David know that? Who's David talked to? How many witnesses? How many witnesses do you need? In the mouth of two or three witnesses. Who cares about that? David's in a bad spot, and David believes everything Ziba says. Now we come to the end of the story. And I'm going to put a caveat at the end of the story that once you grasp it, you're going to be, now I understand Ziba. He's pretty slippery. The third meeting. Are you ready? David was most wrong in the third meeting. Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet him. And by the way, friend, this is very important that you know who states the next statement. Who is making this statement? Is Mephibosheth speaking? Is David speaking? Or is the author speaking? Let's read it. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. Ooh, something's rotten about Ziba's story. Something ain't right. Verse 25. And it came to pass, when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? Why didn't you come with me? And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass that I may ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame. And he has slandered thy servant unto my lord the king, but my lord the king is as an angel of God. And I'm going to say this, some of the most spiritual writing I've ever read in the scripture comes next. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. Verse 28. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thy own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more unto the king? And the king said unto him, Why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, Thou and Ziba divide the land. No, you haven't, David. David, you ain't telling the truth. Yes or no? He told Ziba to take it all. This is the third visit. Look up here. What's the third visit? First visit, I want to do kindness to somebody, a descendant of Jonathan. Second visit, David is running from Absalom. Third visit, Absalom's dead. He's coming back to Jerusalem victoriously. He meets Mephibosheth. And he's even more wrong here, in my opinion. Verse 29, the king said unto him, Why speakest thou any more of these matters? I have said, Thou and Ziba divide the land. And Mephibosheth said unto the king, Maybe this is as great as anything that's ever been said by a human. Yea, let Ziba take all, for as much as my lord the king has come again in peace into his own house. I'm only going to state these. For you that understand evidence, you will understand these concepts. Firstly, the visual evidence was conclusive. The visual evidence, when David had to flee Jerusalem, Ziba said he's going to try to establish himself as king. Here's the problem. When David comes back, look at me in the eyes, there's visual evidence that in my way tells you Ziba was a liar. Why? How do you fake this kind of evidence? Look at me. You know David comes back, but how did Mephibosheth know David was coming back? If he hated David, guess what he would have done? Tried to rise to power. What did Mephibosheth do? He went into mourning all that time that David was gone, and it was visual. You can't fake it. You can't fake, can I be crude? Not taking a bath. Not trimming your nails, not cutting your hair and your beard, not cleaning your clothes. He was in mourning. There's no way you can fake that, because as far as he was concerned, David was the loser. But he was mourning his king. The visual evidence, in my way of thinking, is conclusive in and of itself. In your notes, this is the author's description. So the author is telling you Ziba was a liar and David was mistaken, because he's describing Mephibosheth as a man who's brokenhearted over David. And I say, why does this have weight? And I've already said it. You can't fake it. I mean, it takes time for this to happen. And the time was times of mourning. Now next, the verbal explanation. We move from visual to verbal. Mephibosheth then explains his side of the case. Now please look at me. I'm going to say something very profound here. It's going to be easy to miss. Are you ready? Wait a minute. If you're interested in reading the Bible for more than Sunday school lessons, here it is. Are you ready? It is true, he, meaning Mephibosheth, didn't go with David. Here's the heavy part. Are you all ready? Look at me. Neither did Ziba. Why didn't Ziba go with David? You see, it looks real cute about Ziba. Oh, I'm here for you. All he did, by the way, Ziba's a smart guy. There's politicians this way, folks. There's all kinds of people this way. They play both sides. David's leaving. Ziba's thinking, all I'm interested in is the land, but I'm going to play both sides against the middle. I'm not going to follow David. I'll give him some food. I'll give him some animals, so if things work out and he comes back, I'm happy. And if things don't work out, I just lost a little bit of food and some animals. David, by the way, Ziba never went with David. I wonder why he's so interested in why Mephibosheth didn't go. Ziba didn't go either. Ziba's, in my way of thinking, Ziba is, he is a lifetime career politician. He is Dick Durbin. Yes, I said Dick Durbin's name. Dick Durbin, you only know one thing about him. He's on every side of every question. Was it 10 years ago or 8 years ago, whenever Barack Obama gave up his seat and then they stuck a guy in there illegally and the guy ended up with the pension of a U.S. senator because he was there 2 weeks? I remember Dick Durbin. I don't think this is a good idea. A day later, oh yeah, this is a good idea. No, I don't. He must have gone back and forth 12 times. Dick Durbin's real name is Ziba. Very clever. Very clever. Uh-oh. I'm sorry. Next. The difference is, and I don't have the names, he, meaning Mephibosheth, wasn't able to go, was he? Ziba could have gone. Mephibosheth was not physically able to go with David. I say in your notes, Ziba was a very good man at playing it safe. You see, Ziba, all he lost was a few animals and a little bit of food. He didn't help Mephibosheth. He lied about Mephibosheth because in reality, Ziba was interested in the land. We come to the third part, which to me is an overwhelming part. So at the very bottom of your notes, let me give you this statement. Remember, we are looking for what, when you read the scripture, converging lines of evidence. When you look at any kind of a situation like this, friend, what you want to do is you want to see, does the evidence all point to one conclusion? And you have the visual evidence because it's like, well, how do you fake mourning? He has been mourning for this period of time. You have the verbal, his verbal explanation, which sounds very reasonable, that he wasn't able to follow David, that Ziba had lied to him and lied about him and tricked him. So you have the visual evidence pointing, you have the verbal explanation pointing to Mephibosheth loved David and was a follower of David, supported David. And you have the last thing, and I call it his what? Humble disposition was corroborative. It corroborates everything that's said. You say, what does that mean? Please look at me. We're going to read these verses. I don't think you can fake this kind of speech to somebody. Start in verse 27. When he's explaining himself, when he gets done explaining himself, in your notes, it's highlighted. Mephibosheth says this, "Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king, yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more to the king?" There is something about his humble disposition that, and all of a sudden, for me, you say, who was right? David misread Ziba from the very first meeting. The second meeting, because he brought him food and animals, allowed him to lie to David. And the third time around, he still didn't get it. Even though it seems to me that Mephibosheth said, it doesn't matter. You're my king. I'm here for you. That's the only thing that's important. I think all three lines, the visual, what you could see, what the author says, the verbal explanation, and his humble disposition point to that Mephibosheth was the good guy, Ziba was the bad guy, look at me, and David was the confused guy. I want to ask a question. We're going to read this last couple of lines. Have you ever made a mistake when dealing with people? I would recommend you start reading the Bible. You see it live and in person, how to deal with people. Look at the last line, please, verse 30. Mephibosheth said to the king, "Yea, let him," who's the him? "Just let Ziba take everything. For as much as my lord the king has come again in peace into his own house." Ziba's attitude, look at me, friend, is exactly my attitude towards my mother's millions of dollars. I told my wife today, we have a house. We have too much junk in our house. Can I have a testimony? I would need bulldozers to get the junk out of my house. We have 3 bedrooms downstairs. One of them is usable. One of them can be usable upon great pains of death. And the other one would take a bulldozer to dump it out. You say, what's in those two? She's short and bossy. All of her stuff. You say, what about the basement? Filled up with... Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question. What would I need my mother's stuff for? Here's Mephibosheth. Let Ziba have it. I'm happy you're back. David missed everything about Mephibosheth and Ziba. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, fool me all the time, we got a problem. Father, thank you for your word. This gets down right where we live. It makes us